You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello and welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Touchdown Trips, getting you...
Yes, you.
Yes, you.
Yes, and that voice you hear is...
Ollie Hunter.
Yeah, I'm back, guys.
Guess
I'm
who's back.
How are you feeling, mate?
Back again.
I'm feeling good. Feeling good. Little
Ollie's
bit.
Ollie's back.
You know, a little bit...
Tell a friend.
Worse for wear, but I'm happy to be... I'm happy the band is back together, guys.
The band is back together.
Have you just turned me off while I was singing Eminem?
Yeah, 100%.
I thought you were fading me down for a bit of, like,
background
music.
I wanted to hear what
Ollie
had to say.
Yeah, but if you did... you know, if you were any good at this, you would have faded me down, so I was just slightly in the background.
So, Ollie, how are you feeling today?
Yeah, okay.
Now, the only parts of your story that we told were when we lost you and when we found you. Would you like to fill in any of the blanks?
No.
Fine.
Don't worry, Sherry will do it.
As we said
with everybody else.
If people want to buy drinks for us to get the rest of the story... I mean, even Ollie would tell you.
Enough $5 margaritas in Margaritaville and he'll tell you anything.
Margaritaville was great, though.
We had good fun in there. We did. Coming up on the show today, we've got Colleen Wolfe around the NFL and all sorts of NFL networks. She was absolutely brilliant. Basically spent 6 or 7 minutes mugging off Matt Sherry, which is exactly what you want for an interview. I mean, not mugging off Matt Sherry, but also... trying to be continuously brought back round to serious topics by Ollie Hunter. What were you thinking?
The funny guy became the straight guy. It was a real juxtaposition, wasn't it?
But not a welcome one.
Whoa. People listen for yourselves, but I think Colleen Wolfe appreciated it.
Well, okay.
And she was really happy at the end of the interview. I don't know whether it was because it was over or she was happy that she had a good time with us.
We desperately tried to get some Greg Rosenthal dirt off her because Greg is Nat Coombs' guest at the Basketball Tonight. We're off to see the Milwaukee Bucks against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and Greggy's going to be there, and we tried to get some dirt on him and she had literally nothing, genuinely nothing. He's so clean cut, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
So yeah, we're not
Something
talking about you
not
shadowy lead figure Rich White, by the way.
Cleaner than clean.
Rich White is here as well. He's listening in on the podcast. You know him from the Gridiron Show and from Tuesday Morning Football. Yeah. In fact, you'll know him from one time being on the Gridiron Show when I interviewed him after a London game inside a casino in London because we decided to try and record the podcast while we were there. And the only bit we ever played out was a minute of Rich White talking about the Falcons. I completely forgot we'd done that.
Was that because it was the worst thing you'd ever done?
No, it was brilliant. It was really funny.
Did people think Alan Carr was on?
No, they didn't. He's a wonderful man and he's not back camp. Stop it. Absolutely stop it. So we've got Colleen Wolfe coming up. We've got Mike Haynes. Hall of Fame and Los Angeles
Rich,
Raiders Hall of Fame cornerback.
This is a thing of you being ingratiated within our circle that you get the mick taken out of you. So, you know, this is part of it.
We love you more than anything else, my friend.
We love
that's
you,
what
mate.
We're saying.
I mean, that's over-egging the pudding, Rich, as you well know, but we are a fan of yours.
Minnesota Vikings GM Rick Spielman joined us on the show today.
Is it Spielman or Spielman?
It's Spielman. I just gave it a little bit of zhuzh because, I'm around Rich Wyatt.
Okay. Rick Spielman,
Who we talked Bridgewater.
The further up the greasy pole Will climbs as a broadcaster, the worse he gets. That's the best part, isn't it? Between Ricardo Lockhead.
Speaking of the greasy pole, no, we already did Collie Morphs. Damn it. It's a reference to Eagles fans and them greasing the pole, Ollie, before you start to think it was anything foul in any way. They put Crisco on the poles to make sure they can't climb them around and outside
the
stadium.
That's a great point.
Why?
Because their fans are animals.
The fans are...
Oh, right, okay. Their fans are animals.
That's the best thing you've said today. We've got Rocky Blyer coming on, 4-time Super Bowl champion.
Great
and
story.
Vietnam vet. Great story.
Don't tell me it. I'm going to download and listen to
it. The best part about it is... We kind of like set up the story and he just went, yep, that's the short version of the story. Will was like, well, can you tell it? And And then he spent like 10 minutes telling it in great fashion.
We didn't talk for the next 8 or 9 minutes.
And then in 1972, it was great.
And that's glorious, not having to hear you two interrupting for 8 minutes.
It's the best interview we've done all week because we didn't do an interview.
Because you didn't actually talk to him.
Yeah, exactly.
Who else are we going to hear from?
And we're going to hear from Spags.
Spags!
Oi, Spagsy!
Oi, Spags!
Spagsinho!
That was quite a good little Cockney accent you did there. Well done, buddy.
I'm so proud.
I'm proud of you. If I was listening to this podcast.
I think what we'll do at the end of this.
You've just sent yourself into a snorting tailspin.
I think what we should do at the end of this podcast is we'll do Spags, who obviously breaks down
Spagsy
in nice detail the 2007 Giants game plan against the Patriots. I ask him whether he sees the similarities between that team and this Eagles defence. And then I've got a couple of interviews from the Patriots availability as well. And I like to think this podcast is our transition towards starting to talk about the game in more detail.
That's exactly what it's going to be. We did go to that Patriots media availability earlier. Bill Belichick, good form. By which I mean absolute Bill Belichick form. Did you get him a milkshake? I asked for a milkshake. Quite clearly, you said, "Does anyone want anything from Shake Shack?" I said, "Yes, please. I'll have a milkshake." I actually asked him because you were talking to Ollie at the time, and then when he ordered it from you, he didn't get you to get me one. Liam, it's in no way your fault. It's absolutely.
I'm sorry, Glenn.
No, you're not. No, you're not sorry in any way, shape, or form. You're going to enjoy that, Liam. I really promise you are. So we went to the Patriots media availability, the Rob Gronkowski's podium, because it was his first day back. He's been cleared from concussion protocol.
Oh, he's cleared. He's out of
which,
it now.
By the way, Bill Belichick refused to tell us he'd been cleared, even though we all knew he'd been cleared, and he was turning up to the podium, which he's not allowed to do unless he's been cleared. So, and Bill Belichick still went, "Well, we've not put out the official injury report, so I can't tell you that." That's basically the route he did. Like, I get that he is very closed off and he has his way about things, but sometimes you just think, come on, mate. Just, it's easier for you if you just give that little piece of information.
His lace is consistent.
Excuse me?
Sorry, I had a bit of bacon stuck in my throat. I'm eating a Shake Shack as we do this.
His lace is consistent.
Listen to the snorts, man. He's such a snort.
His lace is consistent.
Sounded like Rich Wyatt.
Can you clip that?
100%.
That's one of the best things.
100%.
At least he's
good. Oh, Rich Wyatt's really looked away when I said that. He's not happy with me.
I love him so much.
Oh, God.
He's a great, great guy.
Oh, Sweet Riot.
Sweet Riot.
Sweet Riot. It's a cross between Rich and Wyatt. Sweet Riot. Made myself cry.
What happens in those media availabilities is that they're on two floors, and on the floor below you have the... basically all of the rest of the roster, and they're just available for you to go and have a chat to, get a one-on-one with it there.
Really?
Alone.
The rest of the roster?
Yeah, basically all of the rest of them down on the floor below, on the upstairs floor.
I have no idea.
This is news to him.
I'm just strolled around the podium looking for anybody who hasn't got anyone near them, and I could have been yucking it up with the rest of the roster downstairs.
And the best
at
part
least
is
it wasn't the last opportunity of the week.
It very much was. And the best part is that you can't, if you'd gone downstairs today while there was the Rob Gronkowski madness going on, you probably could have got one-on-ones with some pretty decent
names. To be fair, I still got some one-on-ones upstairs.
Yeah, because everyone was around Rob Gronkowski's podium. It was absolutely ridiculous. There were 10 podiums set up, and then they do kind of availability at each of those after Bill Belichick's done his press conference. And when I walked into the room, I saw Brady's podium, and there were maybe kind of 15 cameras up around it, and a few people stood around it. I thought pretty standard. Looked around the room, saw Gronk's podium, and it probably had twice the number of cameras. About 50 people stood around it, and Belichick hadn't even started his press conference yet at that point. It was utterly ridiculous. He came out, and he first thing he did was he got asked one question, and he talked completely away from the microphone. Somebody said, like, say this is where the mic is now. He went, "How does it feel to be healthy?" He went, "Yeah, it feels good, mate." It's like, thanks, Rob. Can you speak into the microphone?
And then he's doing.
Well, might still be concussed. Who knows?
Whoa. You can't say that, mate.
Well, I can say
you
that.
You can't say that.
You can't say that.
You're gonna have to time code it.
I'm gonna say that because it was clearly a joke. He's not actually concussed. We all know that. I wasn't starting a conspiracy
conspiracy
against the Patriots.
Is he concussed?
You look genuinely livid. You've almost inhaled that burger. You've only been off the podcast for about 30 seconds and it's mostly gone.
It's not the biggest burger in the world.
You're an animal.
Oh, yeah.
An absolute animal. Is there anything else we need? Oh, yeah, last night we got a burger. We went to Matt's. It's a Minneapolis legend, the original Juicy Lucy. It was fine.
It was fine.
It was pretty good, but it was nothing spectacular at all.
Matt said it was the best burger he's ever had.
Yeah, but the King of Hyperbole claimed it was the best burger he's ever had, and yet I wouldn't put it top 10.
I never said it was the best burger I've ever had. It was definitely top 5.
Oh, man.
It was top 5 burgers you've ever had. Really?
Yeah.
It was a good burger.
You're only mourning because yours didn't have as much cheese in it. Well,
it didn't have as much cheese in it, and I'm livid about it. Absolutely livid. Liam, stop interrupting with people who are doing the podcast while they're doing it, unless you're going to put a microphone on, because it keeps meaning that there's silence in the podcast while they wait and then talk to you off mic. What is your problem, man? You're an absolute disgrace.
Andy didn't get you.
He's still talking as well. Andy didn't get me a milkshake.
Come on, shall we get to these interviews?
Yeah, come on, let's do it.
This is a bit nonsense.
This is all going all over the shop again. We've already re-recorded this intro once because it was all nonsense, so we've had to do it again, and partially because we may have slandered or libelled a member of this table, so we need to move on. You are listening to The Gridiron Show in association with Touchdown Trips.
Who are you looking at?
Are we kicking off the interview with Spags, or are we ending it with Spags? We're ending it with Spags, so we're going to start it with Colin Wolf. Colin Wolf now joining us on Radio Row, and she's a huge Eagles fan. She used to cover the team. She's an NFL Network host, but we don't care about literally any of that.
Oh, no.
Because tonight we're going to the basketball with Greg Rosenthal after he's come on our podcast. And last night, he was talking a bit of smack.
Yeah,
about you.
I was like, that's it. I'm
not going to name names.
I mean, you should anyway.
But there was some smack talks.
Okay.
So we need some dirt on Greg. He just seems whiter than white, and I just...
Cleaner than clean.
I mean, he used to drive a strawberry truck as a summer job. That's, wow. I feel like, pretty white.
How did he reach the pedals?
I don't know. I mean, as somebody else who... I'm like the same height as
Greg. We can say that. That's why we can say it.
Exactly. Yeah, I call him Rosie. Feel free to call him Rosie.
I'm sure he'll love that coming from us.
He will. He totally embraces it. We actually took the old-timey photos the other day together, and a couple of the other Around the NFL podcast guys. So that was fun. And somebody had said on Twitter that it looked like his head was photoshopped in. So yeah.
So this is the version of dirt. He really is cleaner than clean. We thought we might find
so
one person.
Dull, isn't it?
He used to have a band called Delaware when he was, I think, like in high school maybe.
Have we ruined any recordings?
The reason this started is there's some real dirt on Ollie.
Oh.
Right now. If you see Greg, just say, look, I want to know what happened recently with English Ollie.
Okay.
And don't, Greg, he'll tell you.
Yeah. Knowing the way he's
Greg knows the story.
The way he is.
I can't wait to see Rosie. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Anyway.
I'm not going to embarrass Ollie by telling you Ollie.
Don't worry. You've told everybody else.
Sorry.
I'll be the first person you've not told. Why are you wearing that hat?
I've got Eagles fan at the desk.
You're utterly ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, it has to be
just
balanced somehow, right?
You can just hold it.
We don't want to ruin your lovely hair.
Well, it's okay. I already have a headset
on. Okay, there you go.
We'll just, yeah. Look, it's perfect, guys. There we go.
Like a true Eagles fan.
I don't know.
Fan.
Okay, yes.
We should talk about the Eagles. Because out of nowhere, it seemed like 5 or 6 weeks ago, season was done.
Yeah.
Classic Eagles fashion. Never going to come back from it.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly you're playing on Sunday.
Total devastation. I was beside myself. I was actually waiting for that to happen all season long, waiting for something terrible and catastrophic to happen, the sky to fall, because that's my default. I sort of set the bar really, really low. And then, hey, if anything else happens, that's great. I'm surprised. I'm pleasantly surprised by it. But
essentially, that's everyone else at this table, apart from the Patriots fan who can't sit the bar low. And so
it's been tough for you, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. There's my people. You hear them in the background.
They go.
Yeah. But
what?
When Carson Wentz went down, I thought for sure they'd be out of it.
Sorry.
Come on, guys. I'm listening to you.
No, it is fine. Listen, the Eagles are going to win. I'm sorry. That's what you're very nonchalant about this whole thing right now, and I feel like you should be a little bit more worried, more stressed.
What I am is outwardly nonchalant, and inwardly I do have a huge feeling of dread about this game.
Do you really?
I genuinely do, yeah.
I can tell you, having been near this man at two of the last three Super Bowls, they never let us sit together. I don't understand why, but I'm always just about far enough that I can see his facial expressions.
Uh-huh.
And when you were 10 down to the Seahawks, and when you were 25 down to the Falcons, I've never seen a more devastated human being in my life.
That's it, sport, but really hard. I
but every time.
That's sort of what you just did in your chair, like you just repositioned yourself a little bit. That's all the Patriots fans were doing last year in the Super Bowl. Just watching them squirm in their seats was really nice until it stopped.
We all knew we got the last laugh.
Yeah, but
I knew we were going to get on with Colleen. I'm really pleased about this.
This is wonderful.
Yeah, I'm just going to turn his mic off.
Yes, got his mic. That is a power move. I love it.
That's a disgraceful. What I find about this game is that no one's really talking about how well Nick Foles and the crew played 10 days or so ago.
Oh my God.
No one's really talking about it because he blew up one of the best defenses in the entire
NFL. Look like themselves. They looked nothing like themselves all season long. They were amazing. They pressured quarterbacks like crazy. Their secondary is so good. And then all of a sudden, I was really worried after that first touchdown when Kyle Rudolph scored. I was like, well, this is exactly what I thought. Okay, well, I'm going to leave. And I didn't leave. but I didn't even recognize the Vikings defense. And then when Nick Foles started letting it rip, I was like, oh my God, I remember you. Hey!
This guy. And then there was...
It's being back near Pat Shurmur again. It was Pat Shurmur was the one that completely inspired that previously. It just needed to be in his presence again.
Right, you're right.
He's back to being the five-touchdown guy that... Uh-huh. Seven touchdowns in one game?
Ridiculous. Yeah, he got seven against Dortmund.
Somebody needs to get Pat Shurmur in the building on Sunday.
But what else?
Bring him back.
Keep about.
The other thing that you had, and it was typified by the pressure on Case Keenum, and who then threw up that pick six, and that shows that not only is the secondary great, but also the pressure on the quarterback, and that's what we're going to hope for as Eagles sympathizers and an Eagles fan on Tom Brady on Sunday, right?
Yeah, I mean, that is their bread and butter, the Eagles. That defensive line is so good. It has such depth, and the fact that they can rotate guys in, bring guys in waves, and keep them with fresh legs going up against that offensive line, I mean, that's how they win the game. They can pressure with four and then drop the back seven in coverage.
Yeah.
Sympathizers will be the right word come Monday morning. But
that was one of your worst bits of banter of the whole week. That was terrible.
I thought it was solid.
Nope.
Fine. But the question I'm asking myself, we've just spoke to Rick Spielman, and it turns out that any team who've won a walk-off touchdown, won a playoff game with a walk-out touchdown, the six teams who've done it, they've lost the next week.
I heard that.
So how much of that win against the Vikings was a real representation of what the Eagles are, and how much was them playing against a team who were coming off what they were coming off, who, let's be honest, the momentum shifted quickly with the pick six and then the next time. So how much was it just that domino effect of being in that stadium on the road against that kind of team?
Well,
or are the Eagles really
Patriots fan? I think that was a completely accurate depiction of the Eagles, and that's exactly what they're going to do to the Patriots, and it's going to be a blowout Super Bowl game.
And because you're going to basically have a home crowd on Sunday on the basis of where tickets are going at the moment.
I think it will be.
It's going to be so heavily Eagles, I reckon.
You think so?
Yeah, massively. Ooh. We spoke to the people from a certain online ticketing agency.
You have deep sources,
and,
okay.
And they were saying that so many of the tickets are selling to that area. So I think it's going to be Eagles heavy. We got you excited.
I cannot wait. I am so happy.
I love that you're this happy because this guy is so nonchalant every time. And
I know.
Just ridiculous.
It'll be like that. It'll be like that massive Seahawks crowd in Arizona. That really worked for them, didn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to be like crying in a corner on Sunday.
So are you working on Sunday?
Out.
Are you working in the morning?
I'm working in the morning. I'm doing our pregame coverage, game day morning. We think we have 8.5 hours of pregame.
8.5 hours of Colleen Wolfe.
Of Eagles talk.
Oh, right.
It's really wonderful. In fact, on one of our shows, it was before the NFC Championship game, our boss came into the studio with a Vikings helmet on, and he was like, guys, you know this is not an Eagles pregame show, right? And we were like, get out of here.
Well, enjoy on Sunday.
Thank you.
And hopefully on Sunday night, you're going to be able to enjoy yourself because you're going to be a fan of a Super Bowl champion.
Yes, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Enjoy the occasion. Your team doesn't get to the Super Bowl every year.
Enjoy it now, though. That's what you're saying.
You're the worst human being ever.
Oh, my God. Thanks,
thank
guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Back down now on Radio Row, and a man who knows this city well and will understand why we're having so many issues as coming from abroad, and literally Rick Spielman, general manager of the Minnesota Vikings, on the walk across from the bus to the Mall of America, which was maybe 50 or 60 yards, my beard froze. I actually had little icicles coming off my mustache. So
it's all a matter of mindset. I mean, I was out every morning. I go out and walk my dogs. I went out for my 2 mile walk today with the dogs, and but I know it's cold when the dogs don't even want to go out, and I have to kick them in the rear end to get them out the house.
That's the clear sign. Obviously, you have about the most interesting couple of months of anybody in the NFL.
It seems like it every year.
Do you have any beat on what you're going to do with these three guys at quarterback? Is that decision made yet, or are you still working through
it? No,
I
think our number one priority right now is hiring the offensive coordinator. Okay. Pat Shurmur took over as a head coach, as you guys know, of the New York Giants, and last week and early this week, myself and Coach Zimmer have been really honed in on getting that position filled. I think once we get that position filled, then we'll go through our process, and that offensive coordinator will be a major part of the decision on going forward on a quarterback. The biggest thing, though, is you have to be on the same page. So is this offensive coordinator, what is the system? Is he going to use the system we currently have in place? Is he going to bring in his own tweaks? So a lot of that will be based off the decision we go from a quarterback standpoint.
So I guess what you said is it's basically OC first, because I guess what you could do is, if you've decided on one guy, a quarterback, maybe try and marry the quarterback with the OC. But I guess, are you saying that you're going to interview OC candidates, take their opinions on the three guys, and then make the decision that way? Because I guess you could potentially play that both ways.
Yeah, I think the one thing why we've had success, especially since Coach Zimmer has came in, is we work together as one team. And there's specific traits we're looking for. I know when Coach Zimmer, we were 32nd in defense, and this year we were first within 4 years, because it's the type of players that we're looking for, not only the physical traits that they have to have to play in the scheme, but also what type of character guys they are. So I would never want to bring in a player that's not going to fit a scheme. And we are in constant communication between our scouting staff and our coaching staff on not only what physical trait that player needs, whether it's a quarterback or an offensive tackle or a receiver or a defensive back, but also, is it the right fit from a character standpoint?
That collaboration that you mentioned is interesting. I've written a couple of times in the magazine back home this season about how it seems to me that in teams that struggle now, we see this disconnect between the front office and the coaching staff. And I cited the Vikings as a great example where you can see on the field that, particularly on that defense, those guys have been picked with specific roles in mind, and that tells us about the collaboration between it. How important is that relationship? Because,
you know, I made a comment earlier, is that we've progressed, especially on the defensive side, and when you see your players out there and they don't even have to communicate because they know the scheme, they know what each one is doing, and they just look at each other and they know how they're going to make the adjustment to a motion or anything happening in the game. And when you can reach that plateau where those players know each other that well but are physically able to do what they do on the field, that you got something that you built pretty special. And I think last year when Pat Shurmur had to take over with North Turner, step down, that we started establishing out on offense, and from being 28th in offense last year to I think we're almost 10th, we want to continue that path, so it's the same on both sides of the ball.
I think the fact that on that defense you've got no one who's been there from the starting 11 who's been there less than 3 years, and that communication they get from that, and yet Terrence Newman was around earlier, and you've got some guys on there who, it's fair to say, are veterans. I think it would be the nice way of putting it.
So senior citizen, veteran, it's all the same.
So, I mean, how are you already looking at that restock, considering you've got some older talent there, and how much is it going to be about the chemistry over maybe the talent?
We went through that process last year where we had a bunch of veteran backups. And to me, as you continue to build your roster, you want to identify some of those guys that you definitely want to keep around, because even though physically they may not be what they were a couple years ago, but they are so sharp mentally, and they rely on making plays on their mental ability and them just off their experience. Plus, they're great team guys. They're great locker room leaders down there to keep us all going in the right direction. But I think you can only keep so many of those guys, and you have to refresh your roster every year. We had a pretty big turnover on our roster last year. We had five new, basically starting offensive linemen. You know, had another quarterback, which, you know, hopefully that position would be solidified, but you can't predict injuries. That's the one thing in this business. And then you continue to build year in and year out. And if you can do that, then you're going to have a competitive roster every year.
And on that very point, I think the first time we spoke was over the phone directly after maybe the 2013 draft. We had a conversation then when you had a ridiculous number of first-round picks at that point. And obviously your quarterback situation is indicative of you can't predict injuries. But you've never been a man I've often questioned. And yet the decision to...
A lot of people do.
And yet the decision to sign Latavius Murray and then go and draft Dalvin Cook, in my mind, I was trying to figure out how that worked. It worked out in the end with Dalvin obviously going down, but are you confident that he's going to be a player that comes back and continues to have that impact off this injury? And
yeah, talking with our medical staff, in fact, when I got back in town, I spoke with them yesterday, and they think that he is exactly on the same path that Adrian Peterson was when he came off his ACL. And there's no question about his talent and what he's shown in the first four games before he went down. And Delvin's attitude on how he's attacked this rehab, and it's amazing, especially young guys, for the first time in their career when maybe they have to go through some adversity, and all of a sudden he's not playing out there, but yet we're still winning out there. He has a drive like very few have on getting back on that field and even getting better than what he showed early in the season before he got injured.
I want to kind of circle back to him in about a second. I just
over in London, they're questioning stuff we do too here.
Absolutely, it's everywhere.
I thought he just got it at home.
But I just want to know how bittersweet is this week now, because you were so close, and I mean, the last week, the game a couple of weeks ago to me was just a little bit weird because it was so different to what your games have been all season. It just seemed a road environment. A couple of players went against you and then suddenly the domino effect happened. So how bittersweet is it as a guy who's been in this city for a long time, and I imagine it's great to see this show in Minnesota, but you guys were so, so close to being here.
It's frustrating because it's right here in our home, but also I know we have so much that we have to get done going into next year. And all that, you don't have time to sit around and feel sorry for yourself. And I told our staff this, coaches, players, and even our personnel staff, and even the business side. You guys are going to have an opportunity, maybe once in a lifetime, to host a Super Bowl here in Minnesota. Let's show the world what we do as Minnesotans to put on the first-class event. And that's how you go about it. You get knocked down, you get yourself back up, and you go at it again. It's everything from A to Z on how we do things. It's called resiliency and relentlessness, and try to always. That's what we're built on.
Looking back on that game, does any part of you think that the ridiculous high of the week before, you know, almost was too difficult to get back up from?
There was a stat out there that teams that have won in walk-off touchdowns, I think there were six teams that have won and walk-off touchdowns in a playoff. They were 0-6 the next week. They were minus 24-point differential. There was a minus 11 in turnover ratio. And even someone pointed out to me the Franco Harris catch back in. They lost the following week to Dallas, but then they went on, and that's when they made their Super Bowl run after they went through that experience. I think everything we went through in the previous year with all the injuries and our head coach going through 8 eye surgeries and trying to survive the Teddy Bridgewater injury, we grew from that. And I think that showed this year when we did hit adversity and we lost to Dalvin Cook. Our guys learned how to rally around that and play for each other. And I think that helped our football team. And hopefully getting this close and getting a taste of what it's like to play in a Super Bowl, I think we have an opportunity to definitely move forward from last year.
We've spoke a lot about collaboration between head coach, general manager. Could I ask about Bill Belichick? Because as a guy who puts rosters together, it must be incredible to watch a guy who effectively does both of those jobs at once. I mean, they've got a great staff that are underrated behind him, but ultimately he builds teams for his coaching, and that's a rare
No, he's a Hall of Fame coach. He's maybe one of the greatest coaches that ever coached the NFL, and he has a unique ability, which is rare, to do both roles. But I know in our situation, and you look how they built their roster, and it's, you know, they don't have they got the quarterback, which is a key to their success, but they have a lot of very good football players that may be not the most recognizable names out there, but they played together as a team.
And that feels similar to what you guys are building right now.
And
as
that's how we've built this over the last three or four years, is you put together a team. And I know a couple of players, if they start talking about, hey, I'm not getting enough balls my way, Coach Zimmer ain't going to put up with that. He says, if this week is this how we're going to win, you only get one catch this game because we need you to block, that's how we're going to win. And when you can put the team ahead of individual results, you're always going to have a chance to have a chance.
On that kind of point of the team and the ethic on that, and you expertly avoided the quarterback question at the beginning by talking about the offensive coordinator, but just very specifically on one player, Teddy Bridgewater, you've mentioned a couple of times. A question has been asked by us across the media, and I'd be interested to know from inside the building, over how much emotion comes into the decision when it comes to Teddy Bridgewater, because everything we hear is how liked he is in the building, how brilliant he's been, and coming back from this injury, how can you separate that from a decision of, is he going to fit a scheme?
That's extremely hard, you know, and I'm glad you guys are aware of those decisions over across the pond as well that we have to go through. But to watch him and the devastating injury that happened and where he is at today is truly an inspirational story. And his dedication and even how he interacts with that teammates. And I remember, you know, as he went through, got in early his rookie year, made steps his second year and his third year, I'll never forget the third preseason game against the San Diego Chargers. He had like 140 quarterback rating. And it's like, this is our guy for the future going forward. And he had a great preseason until 8 days before the opener, and all of a sudden, devastation hits. But having the team we have and having Coach Zimmer as a leader of that locker room and a leader of that group of men, we were able to overcome that. Now, I have always said I'm going to be as aggressive as I can as long as we do our due diligence to give our team the best opportunity to win. And I know in that situation, that was the best solution we had. And we ended up 8-8 that year. And I think two or three games, two Detroit games where we lost in the last seconds, and even that Dallas game on a Thursday night when Coach Zim wasn't even able to coach, showed you what this team is built of. And we could easily won 10 or 11 games that year.
It's funny you mentioned Coach Zimmer and Belichick in a similar breath earlier. I was thinking about, we watched the two Bills screen yesterday.
Oh, so good.
Thinking about the Bill Parcells connection. But how comfortable are you, how much more comfortable are you now in your seat, because you know that you've found your head coach? And I guess people talk about quarterbacks with general managers, but that is as important as finding the quarterback.
If you don't have the relationship between the head coach and general manager in lockstep on the direction you want to take your franchise, and people in that organization, including the players, start to feel those cracks in that separation, that's when you know you're going to start to have issues. But my relationship and working with Coach Zimmer, when we went out and I had an opportunity to hire a head coach for the first time, I knew he was the right guy because we had a lot of the same philosophies, and I knew what type of leader he was, and I knew what type of teacher he was in development of talent, because he's taken a lot of guys through his career and made good players into very good and great players. And a lot of these extensions that we have coming up with this young core that we want to keep together over the next 4 or 5 years, they owe Coach Zimmer maybe $10 out of that contract for what he's done for them and how he's developed them.
The final thing, and thank you so much for your time. We really do appreciate it. You've been over to the UK twice now.
Love. London's my favorite of all time. I always.
You're also a big Premier League football guy.
Huge. Yeah.
Benjamin Mendy's here tomorrow. If you want to come back and meet him, get along. I don't know how you feel about Man City, but we'll happily have you on with him.
But I have a close friend who's a Man City guy, and I've always kind of been a Tottenham Hotspurs guy. And Kane, I love Harry Kane. I think he's the ultimate pro. Now, I don't know him, but just watching from a
distance.
He's a big
NFL fan.
He's a big NFL fan as well.
And I watch it every Saturday and Sunday. That's all I have. And Coach Zimmer comes in on Sunday morning. We're at the stadium. I'm there at 8 o'clock before the games. And I've got NBC Sports on, and was it Rebecca Lowe and the Robbies and Men in Blazers? I'm all into all that.
By the way, Rebecca Lowe, formerly of TalkSport.
Yeah.
Before she moved to the States,
yeah.
She was on our books. But I just find, because when it comes to London, there's obviously, we're down to just three teams who won't have been at the end of this season. But as someone who's been over twice, if another general manager asked you, if another coach asked you about the logistics of coming to London, what it does for your team, how they react to it, what advice do you give them?
Outstanding. And if you have an opportunity that you are presented to go over and experience that, it's an incredible experience. And I can't tell you the electricity that our players and coaches felt when we went into Twickenham last year and all the Minnesota Vikings fans that were in that stadium, and to hear that skull chant going, it's incredible. And we're 2-0, so I've had great experiences coming over to London. And I do want to give a shout out to Arsenal, because when we were over there, I got an opportunity to go over to Arsenal and spend a lot of time with their front office, and got a chance to meet their manager, and it was pretty special in my eyes. Although Sanchez was still on the team. Did he get transferred?
Yeah, he's at Man United now. But they made some big deals on transfer deadline day, which was yesterday. So they're looking good. Good might be
our transfer window's coming up here in March.
We're looking forward to it.
Well, Rick, we'd love to get you back on around the draft again. It's always a real pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Just don't bash me too bad. I love London. I love the people over there.
Delighted to be joined now on Radio Row by four-time Super Bowl champion. I mean, we've had one-time Super Bowl champions, two times. We won't mention that Charles Haley was here the other day. But we're now joined by a man with four Super Bowl rings with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Rocky Blyer. How are you doing,
hey guys,
sir?
How are you doing?
Well, so I got to ask you, my first question is...
Are you interviewing us now?
American football big over in UK?
Huge.
Huge.
It's definitely on the way as well. The Steelers have been over. They've played.
I know they did. I just was wondering,
I think it's the fastest growth sport in the UK.
Is it really?
It is the fastest growing sport in the UK over the last 10 years. It's gone from being the 12th biggest televised sport to the 5th.
Okay.
It's genuinely really going in the right direction. We've started doing live coverage on our station from this year, but we've had a dedicated show to it for the last 4 years.
All right. Well,
so
that's excellent. Yeah.
It's going in the right direction. Very much so.
They should know automatically who I am.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on how much of an NFL Films fan they are. It depends on
how old they are. So
I didn't want to say that. I was trying to be nice about it, Rocky. Come on.
I'm only 26. So I know you are.
Good.
He's a weirdo, though.
But you get Wikipedia.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually got that over there. That's not the reason. I'm fully aware.
To start off with, because you are here representing a leading veteran hiring solution, and your story is particularly amazing considering you went to Vietnam, you were injured in Vietnam, and yet you won four Super Bowls.
Yeah, very simple. It was a very simple story. Just
what could you tell us?
It was a period of time. I'll tell you, sir. I'll tell you. So part of my story was that, of course, the Vietnam War that was taking place in the 60s, and then all of a sudden into 70s, and there was here a draft process for filling needs within the military. It wasn't all volunteer as we have today, nor was there a lottery at the time that came in the latter part of the 60s and early part of the 70s. So everybody was eligible for the draft, or you could go into the reserve or the National Guard to kind of sideslip that.
A very different draft from the one we're normally talking about here on Radio Row.
That's right, yes. Not the NFL. That's right. So I come out of the University of Notre Dame in 1968, and I am drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers at that time. And so I'm a highly touted, very in-demand running back as the 416th person picked in the draft that year. And so there were 17 rounds. I was the 16th round draft choice. Going to the Pittsburgh Steelers, who had never won a game. They were the losingest teams throughout their existence.
Was Chuck Noll there then?
No, Chuck Noll was not there. Yeah, so Chuck hadn't arrived yet, and so we had only won two games anyway that season. And it was right after the 10th game. I played 10 games, and I got my draft notification, which would happen at that time. Slipped through the cracks, whatever the reason is, and all of a sudden I'm in the military. Going through the training that is necessary, and everybody was going to Vietnam because that's where the war was, and I got orders and cut and went to Vietnam and was assigned to my company and over there, and after 4.5 months in country, we ran into an ambush, and I got wounded twice the same day. I got shot in the left leg, and same action, got hit with a grenade later on, blew up to my right foot, knee, and thigh. The prognosis was I'd never play football again because of the damage that had taken place, because I asked what they would think, you know, could I do this, and their response was, well, don't consider it. It just won't have the strength and flexibility to what we perceive to be a running back in the NFL. In the meantime, I get a letter in the mail. I get a postcard, actually, and it had two lines on it. It said this: Rock, team's not doing well. We need you. Art Rooney, who was the owner of the team at the time. Well, they didn't need me, but it was a nice gesture on his part that somebody cared. Being the organization that they are and were at the time, I came back, and basically they bought me 2 years. The first year I came back, and they put me on injured reserve. Second year, they put me on the taxi squad, or the developmental squad, as it's called now. But they bought me 2 years of an opportunity to heal, to get stronger, to get bigger, faster, and something. And you have to do something with that. So 1972, I come back to the team, and I'm the leading ground gainer during the exhibition season. Not the regulars, just the exhibition season. And so, but it's good enough to make the team.
Yeah,
okay. I don't ever carry the ball thereafter, playing special teams and making tackles and so on. Come back in 72, 71, same thing takes place. In 73, same thing, leading ground gainer again during the exhibition season. Got to carry the ball once that season. Hey, better than the year before.
So how many yards on that carry?
Yeah, 19, 16 actually. Oh. So 16 yards. So it was.
It's just such bad coach.
It was good. But basically, as I was saying, then in 1974, I came back and was a leading ground gainer. Now, I tell you that in context. And the reason wasn't because I was bigger, better, faster than anybody else. It was a simple reason that they were trying to get rid of me. So trying to get rid of me is that they were giving me an opportunity to run and play. So all I did was I carried the ball more than anybody else during a period of time. And because of that, I was a leading ground gainer. And so they had to keep me in 1974. So I was the fifth running back out of four, just so let you know, back playing special teams, once again at the bottom of the heap, when things happen. You know, Franco Harris, our big starting fullback, gets hurt, you know, and the backup is inserted in the game, and I become the backup to the backup.
Somebody's
I had not
be.
Been there before those years. So it was like, hey, they like me, you know, renewed vigor, I'm going to go on. Then all of a sudden the backup gets hurt, and I'm inserted in the game. And then all of a sudden, Franco's back, and we become the running back set in 1974, and we win the division, and we go to the playoffs, we win the playoffs, we go to the Super Bowl, and we win the Super Bowl, and then we play 6 more years together, and we win 3 more Super Bowls, I being part of that backfield. And in 1976, Franco and I become the second set of running backs in the history of the NFL, each to gain 1,000 yards rushing on the same
we
team in the same year.
We had the two guys at Miami in 72, yeah.
Right, in 72, that's yeah. It. And so... And so I get to play, you know, 12 years with that team. And so the whole story is just having opportunities. The whole story is getting a chance and having an opportunity to do that. A lot of people don't get that chance.
We see running back groups thrive together more now in the NFL. It seems that the good Russian teams like to have two guys. How did that relationship work between you and Franco at that point?
You know, it worked well because I didn't want to be Franco. You know, I mean, I didn't want to... be that, you know, I just wanted to be able to play, and so I had a role, and so I played my role, you know, very well. I was a blocking back for Franco, so to speak. I got a chance to carry the ball every now and then whenever Bradshaw felt sorry for me and he'd give me the ball, and then I was able to pick up some yards. But so it worked well, you know, worked well within the system. Franco did what he had to do, and I got to contribute and be a part of that team and offense by simply blocking. Not a glorious position, but it was a good, great...
We've spoken to a lot of former Steelers players over the years. I actually spoke to Art Rooney a few years ago, obviously recently passed away. Although I assume the guy you were talking about was his dad originally. But how much are you still involved with the team? Because they seem to me to be the best team in the league at remembering the guys who have played for them, and
to create that kind of family culture and big on it?
Very much so. I mean, those former players that live in Pittsburgh, and they bring players back for different venues throughout the season for an autograph session or pay tribute to them or whatever it might be. So we're still very involved. They involve us and want our support to interact with the communities.
It's funny that you talked about the blocking and the element of the second back in there. As a running back and as someone who was in the league when the running back was king, it's quite nice to see a Super Bowl this weekend where running backs are going to play such a huge part.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much so. You know, I've always thought it was a huge part. You know, in today's running game, you got away from two backs. Now there's one back. You know, it's a feature. Now we get, a tight end and, three receivers. And, it's an open game, more passing game and so on. But I really do think that there's, room to go back to that two-back offense, and it at times is much needed. Can confuse the defense. They don't know what to do after having only one back. But I always thought it was an important part of the game.
I'm sure it's an important part of the game, but they talk about passing league, don't they? That's what all the talk is about.
Absolutely. Do we need to wrap up? Are we good?
You gave me a tap on the leg. I thought it meant you wanted to ask a question. We're lucky this is pre-taped. I do apologise. I'm fascinated to hear the story, and there's so much more I'd love to talk to you about your experiences at that time. But I'm very aware that we're on Radio Row and you need to get out there and get more people knowing about Fastport, America's leading veteran hiring solution.
That's right.
We have American listeners. They need to know about Fastport.
I know,
as well,
over there. So you got military over there, that's right. You get your mental.
Where are you going to start the British franchise of it, as we've said?
Yeah, that's right. So
perfect.
So
good luck. Thank you guys. Been a delight. Thank you so much. Wednesday morning, still on Radio Row, Hall of Famer joining us now, but not only a Hall of Famer, one of our favourite annual guests, former Patriot, former Raider, former cornerback, Mike Haynes. Mike, how are you doing, pal?
I'm doing great. Good morning.
First things first, last year when you came and sat with us on Radio Row, you just found out that your son had got into, I'm going to get it right
Boston
in a minute,
College.
Got into Boston College, and you were beaming, and you were speaking to your family on the phone and everything. 1 year on, how's he getting on?
Boston College is, last year their team did really well. They got to a bowl game, but they got beat by Iowa in a bowl game in New York, the Pinstripe Bowl. But my son had a great experience. He went there as a quarterback. Now they are moving him to defensive back. I don't know why. His dad was a defensive back.
I was going to say a little bit of...
I was going to say it might be at the Giants.
In the blood. In the blood, definitely.
But today, I don't know if today on my way over here, I was looking at or listening to the news, and they were talking about a couple of quarterbacks like Alex Smith and a couple of guys getting traded. Now, what were the millions of dollars they were talking about for these quarterbacks?
It's crazy.
Oh, my God. It's off the charts how much money these guys are getting. So, I hope my son knows what he's doing by switching. The opportunities seem great for the quarterback position.
You say that, but if you had a great shutdown corner like yourself in the NFL right now, I'm pretty sure if you were playing right now at the level you were back then, you'd be fine for money, I think.
Yeah, right? Probably right. You're probably right. I hope you're right. I'd like to think so.
Start off with, because you join us every year to talk about know your stats, and it's obviously prostate cancer. It is such a huge issue, not just here in America, but home in the UK and all around the world. And you were just saying to us, we got handed the usual sheet, the information sheet, and we said, we know it off by heart by this point, talking to Mike. But you were just saying to us, unfortunately, the numbers are going the wrong way.
Yeah, before last year, it was 1 in 7 men would be diagnosed with it. Now it's 1 in 9. So, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on, but... we got to find out. So I don't know if that means more men are not going, to get checked, or more men are just getting it. But my guess is it's relating to them getting checked, and when they finally go to get checked, it's too late.
And you'd think as we get kind of further on, it's 2018 now, and people's kind of views to the world are a little bit, because there was always a bit of a stigma around getting your prostate checked. There was the idea that, it wasn't something that men felt comfortable with. You kind of feel like as we progress as a society, it wouldn't be such an odd thing for people. But
well, for the most part, we're talking about a blood test, right?
Yeah.
For the most part, it's a blood test. And the other is the digital rectal exam. You have to have both tests, but I don't know if you always have to have both. I mean, if it doesn't run in your family, you probably don't always have to have both. You probably can just work on the blood test. if it runs in your family, you definitely want to do both tests. So, you know, there's really no excuse for men. If we all have the ability to ask our dad and your grandfather and brothers if they've had it, if it runs in the family. And if they say yes, then you react and you start talking to your doctor at your 40. If you don't, if it doesn't run in your family, you can wait until you're 55. I was lucky. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer when I was 55, and it did run in my family. But I found out by total mistake, by being in the right place at the right time. A doctor gave me enough information and scared me that when I got back home, I called my primary care doctor because I was just at a screening for football players, you know. He said, well, let's send you in for a biopsy, and that's the only way you can tell if you have cancer. You're not going to find out by going to a screening. You're going to find out from a biopsy, which is not a fun test that you know, but it's a test that needs to happen if you really want to know if you have it or not.
Yeah, terrifying stuff. But the main thing is people go, they go find out about it, and they go and get themselves checked.
Yeah, get yourself checked. Find out in the early stages. It's totally treatable. You're going to be fine. But if you wait until you have a symptom, oftentimes it's too late.
Let's talk football, Mike, because we've got a game coming this weekend. And we've said it to you before. For you, it was always a disappointment that you had to move teams to go and get your championship, move teams to go and finally reach that pinnacle. But you've still got a lot of love for the New England Patriots, I imagine.
Oh, always, always. You know, Robert Kraft, he's a great owner, done a lot for the community and a lot for former players and current players. I love his mindset. He wants to win and he's hired great coaches. You know, every coach you can think of that has ever been there under him has been a pretty good coach. And now with Belichick, it's risen to the highest level of coaches. And you got to say that Bill Belichick is the greatest coach that ever coached in the National Football League.
How do they, this is a question that's asked left, right, and center by everyone all of the time, quite literally. And yet we've never been able to completely nail down an answer. Maybe Mike Haynes can. How have they managed to stay so relevant and so good despite the fact that we lived in a draft era, despite the fact we live in a salary cap era? There's meant to be parity. A team is not meant to go to the Super Bowl 8 times in 16 years, and yet this Patriots team are doing that.
Well, one, I think, you know, everything starts at the top, and it starts with Robert Kraft. So when he bought the team, he did things to bring back bring back the guys like me who played there when he was watching and a big fan, a guy who might have left angry, you know, and not wanting to be associated with the Patriots. Well, he wanted to change that. He wanted to change that emotion, change that spirit, and give positive energy from me, or get positive energy from me and the guys who played there in those years, like Sam Cunningham and Russ Francis and Stanley Morgan and guys like that. So he's done a lot to change the energy of the team. And then he started hiring good coaches. And I think that, you know, he's a really a bright guy, and he kind of is active in the organization, and his son is too. And I think they've kind of figured it out. They're around these coaches like Bill Parcells, you know, and Bill Belichick, and these guys know football. And when he also bought the team, they still had Buck O'Kilroy as the general manager. So he was there. They still had guys like Ernie Adams. He was there. So there's some mainstays. There's some guys that have always been there before Robert Kraft even bought the team that are there that they can meet together and talk about different things, like what does it really take to win and what kind of players do we really need to win, what kind of quarterback, what kind of receivers. And they're smart enough to figure it out. And I really think that it's not something that other teams couldn't do. But they have been able to do it successfully for a long time, focusing on the type of character that it's going to take to be a New England Patriot, a guy who can come back in the fourth quarter, never give up on his team. And, you know, when you have a guy like Brady who seems to be really a guy who can concentrate and stay focused and stay in the moment and help his team to learn how to do that, I think it makes a difference. I think it makes a huge difference. And I don't know that if Brady was there that they would be able to do that year in and year out if he wasn't there.
We mentioned cornerbacks and money. The Patriots kind of did something out of character this offseason. They went out and signed Stephon Gilmore, big money free agent. They paid him big money. What have you seen from him, and particularly down this stretch run of the season, and what kind of player is he?
Who are we talking about?
Stephon Gilmore.
When it comes to the players, it's all Bill Belichick. you know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's just do your job. If you can do your job, it doesn't matter what position you play under in the Bill Belichick system, you're going to be fine. So he doesn't like the guys to be too high when they win. You know, it's not, hey, the guys, you're here, you did what we asked you to do, and we won, you know. And I think that's what I, at least that's what I feel about Bill Belichick's teams. Even now, they're going to lose the offensive and defensive coordinator. They still have Bill Belichick. You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's going to be different when they lose those guys. I don't think it's going to be any different because they still have Bill Belichick. His personality, he knows what he's wanting. He knows what he's looking for. He gets it. Everybody knows if they work or play for Bill, they know exactly what they need to do to make him happy. I don't expect there to be a lot of changes, even though a lot of changes are always going on.
I'm trying to get the dates right in my head, Mike, but I think you were in Los Angeles right towards the end of the Raiders' time. I think they might have moved not long after you were there. What's your kind of take on them now moving on to Las Vegas and that fan base kind of in Oakland getting the team taken away from them like Los Angeles did around the time you were there?
Well, I feel sorry for Raider fans, especially in Oakland. You know, they lost the Raiders to Los Angeles and then they came back and now they're losing them to Las Vegas. I think it's close enough where real diehard Raider fans, they'll still get there. Maybe before they would go to every game, now they'll maybe go two games, three games a year, something like that. But I really think my worry about them moving to Las Vegas is they might lose their home field advantage, that there's going to be so many people. Like, imagine if they're playing the Eagles in the wintertime. You know, you think the Eagles fans are not going to come out there. And the Eagle fans from all over the country, well, that's the one game that they want to go to because they'll be in Las Vegas. Guaranteed to have a great halftime show. You know, all that stuff. It's all going to be good. So I think the NFL is going to really be excited and happy that they moved a team to Las Vegas. Raider fans, I'm hoping that they don't lose home field advantage, you know, by being in Las Vegas. Over time, that could happen.
How weird is it to see teams playing back in Los Angeles now, but not just playing, with the Rams actually being successful?
A contender. Yeah, I think it's great. You know, I grew up in Los Angeles, so I grew up a Rams fan, and it's good to see football in Los Angeles. I think, you know, cities like L.A. need a big franchise that wins, and they have that again. So it's pretty exciting, and they had a great year last year, a new young coach, a lot of excitement. I think that's good for L.A., and again, I think it's good for the NFL.
Can they sustain two teams, do you think?
I don't know about that, you know, and maybe I don't know about that. I just don't know because, you know, the Chargers, I mean, if both teams, you got to be a winner. This year the Chargers had a pretty good season. So, you know, it was pretty easy to get fans to go there, but their stadium only held, what, 35,000 or something like that. So I think that's all good, but I don't know if they can fill up the Coliseum or the stadium that they're going to play for both teams. I think that's going to be difficult.
Listen, if it doesn't work out, I quite like the sound of the London Chargers. Yeah. I think that fits quite nicely as far as we're concerned.
The Los Angeles Chargers?
No, the London Chargers.
Oh, I like that too, actually. That sounds pretty good. That'd be nice. Would be nice.
If it's not going to work with two teams in Los Angeles, they're going to need a new home. We've got some great stadiums. We've got great fans. I'm banging the table now. Get the Chargers over to London.
Oh, I love it. So I don't know if you got to talk to the Spanoses if they want to do it. Maybe they have to sell the team. Maybe somebody from London could buy the team.
Maybe we'll buy the team.
Mike, how are you for money at the moment? Because we're going to need some investors. We're going to have to put in together. I'm saying the three of us, get in there, get involved with the guys at Tottenham at that new stadium. Let's go and buy the Chargers and get them over to London.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. Let's start a campaign right now.
Mike, it's always a real pleasure catching up with you. KnowYourStats.org for all the information. Pro Football Hall of Famer and cancer survivor. Thank you so much for your
time,
Mike.
Thank you. Hope we can continue to have this great warm weather here, 30 degrees today.
So we've got former NFL head coach, long-time defensive coordinator of various spots, Steve Spagnuolo, with us. You were one of the most interesting guys on Radio Row right now because you can tell me what the blueprint is to beat Tom Brady and this New England Patriots team.
Yeah, I don't know if there's such a thing as a blueprint against Tom Brady. Look, I know one thing. It takes 11 really good football players because he makes his other 10 players really, really good. He's the best that's ever played in the game. You know, we were very fortunate 10 years ago that we played a real good football game and won it. But I got a great deal of respect for Tom.
So, I mean, a lot of people are comparing this Eagles team to the Giants team that you guys had. I think largely because of the deep defensive line and also a defensive line with four guys both interior and outside that when on the field at the same time can all bring pressure. Do you see any similarities there?
No, I do. I mean, they'll put Brandon Graham inside. They already have Fletcher Cox. And we used, in that game that we played 10 years ago, we put Justin Tuck inside. And, you know, the idea, and I'm sure the Eagles will do the same thing, was to get Tom a little bit uncomfortable, get him off the spot, because he's a very balanced thrower. I mean, he slides in that pocket as good as anybody. Now, to do that is a little bit easier said than done, but I'm sure that'll be an attempt by the Eagles.
The Eagles, from what I've seen, and I've not heard a lot of people mention this, they have the guys up front, and they mix man and zone, but they do play a fair bit of cover three behind the pass rush, which I'm sure you've seen as well. Is that something they can do in this game, or do they need to man up 70%+ of the time and really lock jam down those wide receivers?
Well, that's what we'll see. I mean, the one thing I think the Eagles will do is they'll do what they do. I don't think they'll stray too far away. So you're pretty dead on what you're talking about, how they function up to this point. You know, for them to venture into anything too much different, now you're asking players to do something different in 2 weeks that they're not used to doing. But, you know, the challenge will be, you know, will they be able to be as tight in their coverage on those wide? Because Tom can throw into some tight spots. We know what he is. And I think the game will come down to what happens on the outside. Both offenses, I think, who can be effective in throwing to their outside receivers?
If you were the defensive coordinator, what would be the keys to the game for you? What would be the keys of your game plan to win this game?
Yeah, I don't think this is not revolutionary, but for every team you play, you got to stop the run first. I mean, even though, you know, the Patriots do throw the ball quite a bit, you can't let them run it on you because they will. After that, then it's about, you know, how often can you affect the quarterback? Two ways to affect the quarterback: hit him as much as you can, or affect his targets, which are his receivers, at the line of scrimmage and disrupt the timing. If you can stop the run and do that, I mean, you got a pretty good chance of having some success.
How difficult a matchup is Rob Gronkowski to prepare for? And, I mean, there's a million ways that you can defend him, and I don't think anybody's found the absolute right answer yet, but what would you be thinking if you were the Eagles in this game?
No, look, he's a creature you don't have to deal with every week. And now Malcolm Jenkins is a real good safety in this league, and Malcolm's a little bit, he's got some length, and he's an aggressive guy. I'm sure they'll use him at times on Gronk. And I think if Malcolm can get up there on him at the line of scrimmage and affect them there, not let him get out in a route and disrupt the timing, I think that'll help. I mean, I'm sure you'll see the Eagles double-team him once in a while. But look, Tom Brady's used to that, and he'll just go find another target.
And I've asked a lot of people about Bill Belichick this week, because I think sometimes it's Brady, 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 and Belichick sometimes gets overlooked a little bit. I mean, as a coach who's gone against him, what's it like? I mean, is it the ultimate challenge? Because I've heard a lot of people say, coaching-wise, they love to play them early in the season because he shows you the weaknesses in your own team almost.
Yeah.
What's it like, that coaching matchup?
Well, he's going to do that. Look, the one thing I admire about them is that they get the players in their system that they know can adjust during the game and during the week, because they're great at changing schemes on both sides of the ball. I'm sure they do it on special teams as well, but that's the culture, that's what they built. The pressure is on those players to know from week to week what they're going to do, and they do a great job at it.
And how difficult is that? I mean, the first thing we talked about was how the Eagles approach the game, and you said they'll do what they do because it's hard to do that. So It's incredible that they are able to.
Yeah, just a couple of different ways to go about it. There's all different philosophies in football. There's no one mold. I mean, look at both these teams functioning the way they function, have been successful. They're in the Super Bowl. So we'll see when they face each other, you know, who ends up winning.
And you've been in New York for the last few years, interim head coach at the end of the season. What's next for you in terms of, are you looking for a DC job again?
I'm very hopeful, but it's late in the year. This has kind of happened in New York a little bit late. A lot of the jobs have dried up, and that's okay. Sometimes that happens. If it's a year off away from football, I'll fill my time somehow, I'll be around with football somewhere, and then hopefully I'll be back coaching again. I still have the fire under my belly and want to do it.
And can that year off sometimes be great for you, because you can kind of take a step back, reassess what you're doing.
You know, sometimes you see things better when you step back outside of the game and look from afar than you are when you're right in the middle of it and you got your head down and you got the blinders on. So I'll look forward to that.
And just finally, can we get a pick for you for the game this week? How do you see it shaking out?
Here's how I've been answering the whole pick thing. I grew up in Boston. My in-laws are from Philadelphia, so I'm staying right down the middle on this one.
I would always be siding with the in-laws personally, but that's great. Gotcha. Thanks very much, man.
Appreciate it.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.